This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. Among the sounds of the Southeast that we bring you weekends here on WUTC is the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. It's a weekly live radio show from Off Square Books in Oxford, Mississippi, that features authors and musicians from the places we call home. Thacker Mountain airs not only in Mississippi, but also Alabama, not only in Memphis, but also here in Chattanooga, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WUTC. Jim Dees is the host, and thanks to sound engineer Jeffrey Reed and the rest of the Thacker team, we bring you a host-to-host conversation. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Ray, thanks so much. Really appreciate the opportunity.
And thank you for bringing Thacker Mountain Radio Hour to our listeners here on WUTC in Chattanooga and the Tennessee Valley. You have been with your colleagues bringing this program to the Southeast, to Mississippi and beyond for 20 years. How did this start?
Well, as you mentioned, it was 20 years ago. Actually, in 2022, we'll be on the air 25 years. And it started back in 1997 in Oxford, Mississippi, when a couple of three acoustic musicians wanted a nice venue to play music without having to wait till 10 o'clock at night in a bar situation. They wanted to be able to play acoustic music maybe earlier in the day. And they asked Richard Holworth, who was the owner and still is of Square Books, our wonderful bookstore on the square here in Oxford, if he would provide a venue for an hour-long show of acoustic music. And of course, being the good businessman he is, he said, sure, if we can tie it in with literature and selling books, obviously. So the idea of having acoustic music, and then Richard insisted on having an author every week, and it started from there. They began having an hour-long show. One of our local radio stations picked it up, and that's how it started 25 years ago.
How has it changed over all that time? Sounds like the format is still the format, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and tune on in.
That's pretty much it. So the format remains unchanged. Some tweaks have happened here and there production-wise, particularly in paying the guest and paying our band and our production crew. In the early days, the checks were small, if they even existed, but now we have a nice budget thanks to our listeners and supporters, although we're always looking to expand the budget, as you know all about.
Indeed, indeed. I've been listening to some of the recent shows, and one interview that I heard that really stood out for me was the one with Nikki Giovanni. Tell me more about that.
Oh, man.
Well, as you know, Ray, you interview people, and the key to a good interview is having somebody interesting and cool to interview. It's amazing to me. We have really top-name authors who are very well-established who come on the show and almost freeze up. You would think they've written books, they've done book tours, they're comfortable with the interview, but it's not always the case. With Nikki, she was a firebrand. She was on fire from the very get-go, as I'm sure you do when you're about to interview somebody. You do as much research as possible. And in her case, and in a lot of cases, I go on YouTube and see what kind of a talker they are. Are they very gregarious? Do you have to pull the info out of them? Just how are they? And when I saw her on YouTube and saw how open and funny and very intimate she can be, I thought, boy, this will be a breeze. If anything, my problem is going to be cutting the questions down because she tends to expand and elaborate. So you want to give her room to operate. So she was just a blast to deal with. And I look forward to having her down here in person because she's so charming that I think in front of a live audience, she'll just kill everybody. It'll just be great.
You're not just a talker. You're also a writer. And I'm thinking of your time as a reporter for the Oxford Eagle and your book a few years ago, The Statue and the Fury.
Right. I have found my reporting years really coming into play when interviewing these authors because when you're reading through their bio stuff or reading their book, you're always looking for that nugget, that interesting little bit to pull out. The same way you do as you're a reporter. You're looking for the nut of the story, the graph that's really going to bring the reader in and tell them what's happening. I do the same thing trying to interview authors, try to find that Maybe something that's not been touched on a lot. There's some quirk or there's some interesting part of their childhood that's not talked about a lot. And try to pull that out. It usually results in some good conversation.
How do you approach the music side of the show? How does that differ from how you approach the authors, the way that you've just been talking about now?
Yeah, the authors, we're very, very lucky that Square Books, we work with them. We do the show in one of their four stores on the square now. They pretty much book the authors, and we're at the point now where authors want to come to Square Books. So we get really top-of-the-line authors, you know, people like Rick Bragg and Nikki Giovanni, that if we were just a radio show in Oxford, Mississippi, with no tie-in to the store, I'm not so sure, you know, people would fly in to Memphis, rent a car, come down here, and be on our show for 15 minutes. Although, I got to tell you, Ray, we pay $100. That's right. $100. But for the music, we book that. Our crew books that. Square Books takes care of most of the authors for us. The musicians, we have a lot of musicians sending in their tapes and discs asking to be on the show. And then we have some wish list people of our own. Boy, I'd love to have so-and-so. And so we go after them. And it's hit or miss. We've had some musician we've tried to have on for a year or two, and finally we get them. We have some that fall through. We have some we've never heard of who ask to be on the show, and we give them a shot, and we're pleasantly surprised, sometimes maybe the other way. But we're at a point now, after 20-something years, we're sort of known in this area. In Oxford, Mississippi, we're about 2 hours away from Muscle Shoals. We're an hour and a half away from Memphis. We're a morning's drive from New Orleans. So we get a lot of bands and musicians, top-quality acts, coming through this area, especially in the spring when all the festivals are happening. So it's like I say, it's hit or miss. It's some we want. It's some we are giving a crack at and just give them a shot. It works all sorts of different ways. The pleasant surprises are really the most fun. Bands you've never heard of that end up blowing you away. Somebody like Kingfish is a young blues guy in Clarksdale. Christoph Ingram is his name. He was on our show when he was 14. And did a version of, well, that afternoon he played Double Decker and did the version of Jimi Hendrix's Star Spangled Banner before he got on stage out in the crowd. And we said, all right, this guy's going somewhere. And indeed, you know, now he's playing with Buddy Guy or whoever. So it's a lot of fun booking the music.
How would you say the scene for writers, the scene for musicians from where you sit has changed? It's never been easy to be a writer or to be a musician anywhere.
You know, it's funny, Ray, I was actually thinking about that this morning, kind of anticipating what you might ask. And one of the questions I thought about was, how do you book literature in this day and age when people are like their Kindles or they like their phone? And who's going to sit and listen to an author read for 15 minutes with no commercials, no interruptions, just literature? And I think the reason is it's still happening is because the writers, we've got a young crop of writers coming through now, particularly people of artists of color, African-American writers who are coming up younger. Kiese Lehman, we were talking about earlier, Karen Russell, Sarah Broom down in New Orleans just won the National Book Award. They're all in their 20s and have their first 2-3 books out, and they're just starting their careers, and you can already tell these are going to be wonderful writers for decades to come. So, and actually the same thing with music. This new crop of musicians, you're seeing more females starting bands and being the leaders of bands. I would worry about music and literature were it not for these young acts coming along now that are going to pick up the torch and more than carry it. They're going to light up new areas. So, you know, the future is very, very bright for literature and for music as far as that goes.
All this time that you have been doing the show, you have seen again and again what you would call the dichotomy there in Mississippi, how some things have changed in the past 20 plus years in your lifetime, and how other things have stayed very much the same. Talk to me more about that dichotomy that you have such an acute sense for.
Well, you know, the idea of a radio show, for one thing, that's kind of almost passé, a radio show. You know, I mean, although you and I love radio, obviously, right? There's a lot of podcasting going on now and on demand. We're on Saturday afternoon on your station. We're on Saturday evening in other places. And You're a young man, Ray, but when I was a little kid, the idea of sitting around the radio on a Saturday night was already getting kind of old. TV was so big, but I still like that idea that people will turn on the radio on a Saturday afternoon or evening, and while they're shelling peas or preparing dinner or getting their fishing gear ready for their kids, as Jeffrey often does, they have the radio on. They may not be hanging on every word, but they're listening. I hate it that the pandemic has increased our listenership. It's probably true for WUTC. We've been told our listenership is up in the past year because more people are at home. Maybe they've lost jobs and they're at home. I hate that that's the reason. But when you get around to that sort of thing during a year like we've had, and you realize you're offering a service, you're offering some sort of comfort, it really, really makes it even a stronger feeling to do the show, that you know there are people that are actually in a bad way. And for 1 hour, we shy away pretty much from politics or anything. I mean, we do literature, so it can be controversial here and there, but we just try to offer a good solid hour of entertainment. And I feel like it's even more needed now than ever. So again, we hate the reason for it, but it makes us even work harder to put on a good show every week.
Well, I think so too. And we are so thankful that you and the rest of the crew there at Thacker Mountain Radio Hour do what you do. Where'd the name come from?
Ah, interesting. There is a water tower south of Oxford, sort of abandoned now. I guess it was a county ranger station where there's a fire tower where they would have, you know, guys stay up there for days and nights at a time watching out for fires. And it's located about 7 miles south of Oxford. There's an area down there called Thacker Heights. And Richard Holworth, again, the owner of Square Books, when the acoustic musicians first asked him if they could use the store for a venue and they needed a name, he came up with that name, almost making fun of us a little bit, because he said Thacker Mountain when I think it's 300 feet elevation or something. We don't have mountains in Mississippi. So that was a little inside joke, I think. And he said in interviews that he named it that because he thought the aspirations for the show would be kind of small, and maybe we were a little bit amateurish. So he gave it this grand name almost as a joke. But I like to think over the 20 years or so, we're not a joke anymore. We've won some awards. We've got great listeners in Tennessee, Alabama, and Mississippi now. So I feel like we've outgrown that joke.
I think you have. I think the sky's the limit for the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. And we, again, are so thankful for what you and everybody there does, bringing the show to your audience there in Mississippi, to us here at WUTC in Chattanooga and the Tennessee Valley. Jim, thank you so much.
Ray, thank you so much. And we really appreciate all the listeners on WUTC. And we'll work every day to make the show better and better for all our listeners.
Listen to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour, Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on WUTC, 88.1 FM, WUTC.org, and the WUTC app. Connect online with Jim and the show and Thackerbackers everywhere at thackermountain.com and on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots talking writing. Our guest is Victor Wooten, the only man to have been voted Bass Player of the Year in Bass Player Magazine's Reader's Poll 3 times in a row. He was also voted one of the top 10 bassists of all time in Rolling Stone. This is Victor Wooten playing bass with Bella Fleck playing banjo, Howard Levy playing harmonica, and Victor's brother Roy Wooten, known as Future Man, playing his signature drumitar. Since 1988, they've been playing music together as Bella Fleck and the Flecktones. Howard Levy left the band for a time, but he's been back for more than a decade. This is one of the most recent recordings they've made together in 2016. It's part of an album released in tandem with Victor's first book, The Music Lesson. Thank you. Victor Wooten's second book, just published, is titled The Spirit of Music, described by a reviewer in the Washington Post as a book that stands happily against traditional music pedagogy and canned notions of achievement. It's the sequel to his first book, and like that book, it's an allegory in the form of a Harry Potter-ish adventure, reflecting the playful spirit that's also at the heart of his music making with the Flecktones. What you guys did together exemplified the whole notion that in order to make music, you have to play. It always looked to me like you guys were just having a great time, like a bunch of kids in a sandbox.
You're right. You're so right, Richard. That's the great thing about music, is that it has that, you know, ability to bring people together and to make sense out of things that may not seem to make sense. You know, music is powerful like that. I mean, like my brother Joseph, the keyboard player, he'll say, you know, you can take someone who coughs and someone who drops a chair on the floor. You know, two different things that don't seem to relate. But if you do those things in rhythm, in a repetitive rhythm, all of a sudden you'll start dancing to it. You know?
Yeah.
And so music has that ability to bring people and things that don't seem to relate together and show that, yes, we can relate. Yeah, I like that.
And the notion that at one point, as you said in the book, that music is harmony.
Yeah.
Which is, seems to me, your thesis in your book.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we all have that ability, you know, and music is a great way to get along. You know, it teaches us how to listen, how to recognize our differences, and then celebrate them. You know, I play the bass guitar. When I play with Bela Fleck, he's not trying to make the bass be a banjo. He recognizes that the bass strengths are at being a bass. So we recognize our differences and support them, and then, you know, maybe even exploit the fact that, yeah, you're good at doing what you do. You do that, you know. And then when we're listening to that music, if I'm standing next to you listening to the music, you know, I don't care what color your skin is, who you voted for, who you pray to. The music just makes us agree. We're even nodding our head at the same time in agreement. You know, music is powerful that way. And then with the second book that I just wrote, The Spirit of Music, it raises the question, because of its power, is there anyone or entity that are trying to get rid of it because of its power?
Mm. Yeah, I like the whole battle against the dark side in the book. Because
the phasers.
Because it allows you to talk about something that's really difficult to talk about. You know, the role that music plays in our lives. I guess the way it works for us.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, seems like so much of it happens on an unconscious level that it's hard to put it into words.
In a big sense, you are right. You know, but there are scientists now and neurologists and people that are studying music as well as studying musicians' brains. I literally have friends who have been put in MRI machines and while they play and they study their brain, because science wants to know how our brains do what they do. You know, there are parts of our brains when we're playing at a high level, there are parts of our brains that light up like fireworks, but then there's other parts of our brains that completely shut down. You know, the part about judgment, this is good, this is bad, that gets out of the way when we're improvising at a high level, and we're just there in the zone, you know? And that's powerful. And so science wants to know, you know, science has shown that kids learning music do better academically in the rest of the subjects. you know, it's, to me, it's sort of like the fact that I can buy a liter of Coke cheaper than I can buy a liter of water. And as absurd as that sounds, it's done on purpose. But by whom and for what reason? And music can fall into that category, too, if we're not careful. And that's what I wanted to point out. Yes, we all love music, so let's pay attention so that we don't lose it.
More than one person has suggested that the way music is delivered now through streaming services, that, I hate to say that, but that there's this sense that it's almost disposable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, every advance forward also, you know, has the opposite possibility. You know, we all have cars now, but whoever was making horse and buggies way back, you know, is not so happy probably about the car. And also, even though with the car we get there faster, we don't see as much as if we were on a horse and buggy. So every gain can produce a loss. And I see a lot of possible losses as well as a lot of possible gains in music and the technology that we use. But the fact that the artists are not making money from it anymore, where, you know, when we were young, Richard, when we were young, we would happily pay for music and television was free.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's completely reversed, right? We'll happily pay for television and then complain that there's nothing to watch, but we want our music for free. And so that puts us, people who make music for a living, it puts us in a jam.
I know. I don't have an immediate answer to that. I do know that, you know, I'm here on a university campus, so most of the time, but for the last year, there's lots of young people around. And I can't think of any young person I've talked to who doesn't put a high value on music and doesn't have an intimate relationship with it.
Exactly.
And I don't think,
I agree with that.
It's not that they consider it disposable, but if you make something available to people for nothing, they're not going to complain.
Right.
Why would they?
Yeah, and most won't, no, because it's the ease that we can get music that will make us overlook the problems of how we're getting and what we're getting.
Mm.
So, you know, most of us who know that music is indispensable, there's no way we want to live without it. But it's sort of like the same way we know that we can't live without water, but we've been convinced that we need to pay for it and that we need to pay more for it than we will pay for Coke or Pepsi. Right? So to make it easy for us to get, it can also make us a little brain dead in other areas. So all of these little young people who understand the value of music, I can almost guarantee are not paying for it. You know, we may be paying for a streaming service, and when the streaming service is making money, but the artist isn't. And that's the thing, is that it can make us aware in one way and brain dead in another. And that's the thing where, you know, with this new book, I just want to raise questions. Like you said, I don't know, I don't have an immediate answer. Neither do I. But someone needs to be asking these questions. And that's what I did in this book.
Yeah, understood. As long as we're having the conversation, we're looking to try to find some sort of answer. I like, you know, your observation of the essential paradox inherent in everything in our lives, perhaps summarized by, if at first you don't succeed, fail again.
Exactly. That's how we get good at anything. We learn to walk by falling over and over. And because we didn't give up, you know, no kid just said, hey, this walking thing just ain't for me. You know, mama, just push me for the rest of my life. We don't give up. You know, to give up is a thing that we learn, right? A child will just do it over and over and make a game out of it. Falling is fun. But now you think about it, it's hard to fall. You know, when we finally learn to walk well, it gets hard to fall. It's not that we don't fall, but it just rarely happens. And now we're so good at walking, we're so good at keeping our balance because we've failed over and over. But a lot of times in lessons, especially music lessons, we criticize you every time you fail. And that's not fun. So people end up wanting to quit. We're not realizing that failing is a part of the growth. And instead of criticizing the failing, we should really, really like pay attention and congratulate the person for the effort, whether they failed or not. When you make trying fun, failing is just a part of it. So like the book says, you know, fail once, fail again. First you don't succeed, fail again.
Fun comes up a lot. And I think it's hard to have fun if you don't relax. It's kind of hard to make music if you don't relax too, right?
Yeah. Anything that we do well, we want to get it to that relaxed place, you know. And the quicker we can do that, I believe the faster we will learn. You know, and so, you know, teaching comes into that in my mind when I start talking about that. But yeah, we're trying to get to what we call natural. In other words, when we see someone who's really good and really relaxed, and we say, wow, that person's a natural. But in music, we want you to become natural by doing some unnatural things, like lock yourself in a room and practice all day. Right? I think about when we were learning to speak English as kids, nobody told us to lock ourselves in a room and practice. Right? That's an unnatural process. But when we're saying that that person is a natural, we're really saying that that person is like nature. Right? So to me, nature is a part of becoming natural. But musicians are told to get ourselves and lock ourselves in a room away from nature, which is the exact opposite of being natural. So, you know, with these books, the music lesson, the spirit of music, I'm trying to bring back the awareness of the natural process and the benefit of it. And I think music learned in a natural process will produce a lot of benefits.
At one point, you quote your teacher in the book. I think it's Michael you're quoting when you said, music can be divided into 10 equal parts. By using all the parts equally, any musician can sound like a seasoned professional.
Yes.
I'm assuming you figured that out for yourself.
Well, I guess so. It was more of an awareness of what was already happening. In other words, when I was learning to play music, you know, I was learning a bunch of things. Even when I had to learn myself, I'd put on a record, put the needle on the record, and realized I was learning more than just what note to play. Having grown up in a band with my brothers and having been playing dances and parties and gigs since I was very, very young, I realized that getting the note right is not what made people dance.
This is Scenic Roots, talking writing. Our guest is the uber bass player, teacher, and writer Victor Wooten, probably always best known as the bass player with Bella Fleck and the Flecktones.
Early on that there's something more than just the right note that's going on here. Where a lot of our education of music is about playing the right note and knowing what the right note is even before you play it. Right? Even when we talk, we know that the tone of the word can change what the word means. The dynamics of the word. So music's the same way. It's not just the right note. Because nobody gets up to dance because the song's in a certain key. We dance to the rhythm, the feel. Even if the rhythm's right, you know, if the nightclub, all their subwoofers go out and we're only listening to the tweeters, the rhythm might be right, the notes might be right. It might be your favorite song, but you won't feel like dancing because the tone is not right. So, you know, it just came through awareness, especially when I started being asked to teach music, and I realized that, you know, most people were teaching notes. And I thought, these notes, you know, what they're teaching is good, but they're just people are leaving a lot out. So I decided, I'll let everyone else teach notes. I'm going to teach everything else except the note, and try to, you know, level out this teaching playground. And that's why I came out with the other 9 elements of music. Of course, there's more than 10, but to keep it simple, I made it 10. With notes being 1, but there's 9 other things that are just as important as the notes.
And I like that that could equally be applied to pretty much anything in life.
That's the whole key. That's the whole key to the books, is that you. I'm saying music, but you can insert whatever you want. And that's been the beauty, is that I get people. I had a woman who's been running. She ran 30 miles the other day, and she was just telling me about how the things in the book relate to her mindset of running. I've had a chef tell me the same thing. I had a gardener, a woman who's a master gardener, and she went through the whole 10 elements of music and showed me how in her garden she uses each one of those. And I was like, wow, it's working. This is exactly what I want. Yeah.
My wife was on the faculty here, and she said more than once, if you want to learn something, teach it.
That's it.
And exactly. It sounds like that's working for you.
It's working for me. You know, I even wrote that in the book, teaching completes the circle of knowledge, or the cycle of knowledge. Yeah. You know, once you can teach it, that means you really have to know it. You know, and I think it was attributed to Einstein, said if you can't teach it simply, you don't know it well enough. And teaching will cause you to have to know it. So I urge somebody that when you learn something, if you want to know it well, teach it to someone else. It really doesn't matter what it is or how much you know. There's always someone who knows less. And you starting to teach it correctly, teaching it correctly, will cause you to know it even more. Yeah, so I totally agree with that.
Yeah, my experience in teaching is, oh my God, don't ask me another question. I'm not sure I can answer it until you finally realize it's all questions.
That's the important part, yeah.
nobody necessarily has any of the answers, but by framing the question, at least we're starting to come to terms with it.
Yes.
To understand
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, a lot of us want answers, but answers are usually the end of the dialogue where questions keep it going. And good teachers will keep you questioning, and that's what, you know, the teacher in the books, Michael, his whole thing is answering a question with a question, because he wants you to keep questioning, not just end with an answer. And through your questions, you will find answers, but you'll know that the journey hasn't ended. And so it's like trying to count to infinity. You never get any closer to the end.
I know it, and especially for young people, I think that's hard to accept that. There is no answer,
yeah.
You know. They want answers. Of course they do. In their minds, well, you know. You can explain this.
I do know. And yes, there are answers. But the answer isn't the end.
Right.
That's the main thing. You know, the answer isn't the end of the quest. And that's what a good teacher will do is, yeah, they'll help you discover the answers, but hopefully in a way that you realize there's still more.
More questions,
and that's
usually.
To me, exactly. More questions. Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Do you teach regularly?
I do. I'm fortunate now that I get to teach quite regularly to groups of people, usually at a time, mainly every month through Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Are you teaching virtually?
Virtually right now, yeah, mm-hmm. Which I'm loving because it's allowing me to be home, which I haven't been home this long in 30 years. So I've been enjoying it. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. I was thinking when you guys were playing regularly as the Flecktones, you didn't have a whole lot of downtime, did you?
Not at all. No, not at all. We toured heavily for 30 years, I guess. Over 30 years now. And you know, at the origin of the band, you know, we had Howard Levy on harmonica, And he had two very young kids at the time. Mm-hmm. And he was away, you know, and we'd hear about that, and it was a struggle for him. And, you know, we didn't quite get it because he was the only one with kids. Then all of a sudden I had kids, and now I'm getting it. You know, now Bela has kids, and he gets it. So it's an evolution. But, yeah, we've been doing this thing for a long time. Our kids are all grown now, except Bela's. Bela's are still young.
But what I find heartening is that you're going to still keep doing it. At least that's the impression I have. It's been a while. It's been, what, 2 or 3 years since you played a gig.
Yeah, it's been a while, and we've been doing it a lot less. You know, this is still what we do. We make music. We travel making music. But no one's doing it at the same rate as we were back in the late 80s and the early 90s.
Who would want to, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, young people want to. Mm. You know, the kids need your time if you have kids.
Yes. I guess that's another one of the questions that we all have to answer at some point. How are we going to divide our time? And how can we do it most with those who need it will get it?
Yeah. You know, and it helped for me to look at, fast forward to the end of my life. And, you know, if I'm fortunate enough to be at the end, still sane, clear of mind at the end of my life, you know, and what will I be thinking about? Will I be thinking and saying, man, I should have practiced more, I should have done more gigs? Or will I be saying, man, I should have spent more time with my kids and my loved ones, I should have told my wife I loved her more times, you know? And when I look at those answers, which are easy, when I think about the end of my life, I realize that I should pay attention to that, even in the middle or beginning of my life. And at that point, it makes it clear. Yeah, touring and gigging is fun. Do it while you can, but not at the risk of ruining relationships or missing relationships, quality relationships.
You almost put a line under one of the elements in which music can be divided, and it seems to me that it's what life comes down to, listening.
Listening, yes. Yes, listening to me is the most important. Even though I say that all of the elements are equal, for me it really does come down to listening, because that is what is going to point you in the direction of how to use all the other elements, is listening. And in music education, there aren't enough exercises that help us become better at listening.
As we've already established, these apply equally to many other pursuits, but that one seems to me, as you were just saying, that's the essence. Listening to yourself, yeah. Listening to your experience, listening to the people around you, listening to the little ones.
Absolutely.
That's really what it's all about. Yeah.
Hmm? It really is. It really is in all aspects of life. You know, to me, listening is sort of like equal to having questions. You know, where talking is more like the answer. You know, they're both important. But the listening is really, really the key. If I'm going to play music with you, I don't even really know what to play until I listen to you. And it's the same way if I'm listening to an audience. I need to pay attention to their reactions, what they're asking for. I need to be listening to them. I need to listen to my instrument, how it's responding, so I know whether it needs to be tuned or whatever. Listening is just the key to life, becoming a better listener.
That's what I always liked so much about listening to you with the Flecktones. It sounded as if you were all in the moment and surprising each other all the time.
Totally. Totally. And the cool thing, you know, is the big testament to Baylor's greatness is that he allowed it. You know, and a lot of bands, when you have a band leader, you got to listen to the band leader. You know, James Brown was a lot like that. You had to watch everything he said. He would fine you if you made mistakes. But it produced a certain thing, and it changed all of music. Bela did it in a way where he said, I'm a leader. Bela described himself as a leader among equals. So we all had equal say. Bela knew that I was probably a better bass player than he was. So it didn't make so much sense for him to tell me what to play. You know, in the same sense, if I wrote a song, I'm going to tell Baylor what his banjo part is. He's the banjo player. And because of that, Baylor Fleck and the Flecktones had Baylor's name in the title, but the band sounded like a band. Mm-hmm. It didn't only sound like Baylor.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
The book by Victor Wooten, just published, is called The Spirit of Music. It's a celebration of the power of music and at the same time a reminder of its inherent fragility. Scenic Roots, talking writing on listener-supported public radio.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.